Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to First District Politics. It's a big night tonight at First District Politics. We're here in Wisconsin. I'm Bill Lichter. And going to be joined tonight with the famous Laura Loomer at Laura Loomer. Welcome, Laura.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Laura, we have to watch out. There's a train coming. Get out of the way. Trump train. Stopped all aboard the Trump train. And for any of the Marxist control freaks that are listening tonight, if there's still tickets available, there's still time to hop on the Trump train. Don't worry about it. We're friendly. Come on board. So this is a big night for First District Politics, Laura Loomer. It's the last time I'm going to call you Laura Loomer. We're going to go with Laura for the rest of the show, if that's okay with you.
That works best for you.
It does. It does. And really, I want to just take a minute to say thanks for getting on the show. Thanks for being a friend, and thanks for what you're doing to help out Wisconsin's First District Politics.
Of course.
What I wanted to do, Laura, tonight is one of the most recent things that's made you pretty famous is the Vegas shooting, the cover-up, the Vegas massacre. So I wanted to touch base with you and see if there's anything new on what's the newest and latest thing that's going on out there.
Well, of course, there are still a lot of unanswered questions and a lot of uncertainty surrounding this shooting because, one, there hasn't been a motive that's been released, and two, it seems like the law enforcement and investigators, along with the coroner's office, are doing everything in their power to prevent the release of information pertaining to the shooting and the investigation. So recently, what you had is a lawsuit where, family members and the media were suing for the release of autopsy reports and other evidence pertaining to the investigation to be made public. And when the autopsy, when it was ordered, when a judge made the order in Vegas for the autopsy report of Stephen Paddock, the alleged shooter, to be released, not only did the coroner defy the court order, but he refused to turn over the autopsy report. And then he was ordered yet again. So he waited an entire week and then was finally forced to turn it over to the media. And you have to ask yourself, why is it that these officials are going to such great lengths to defy court orders and keep the public out of the loop regarding the worst mass shooting in U.S. history? Very concerning.
Well, and very concerning. Go ahead. Well, I'm just going to say, Laura, this whole thing, this whole Vegas massacre from the get-go, and how it's not being talked about, it's just being brushed under the rug in a sense. It's something else. Just to me, it reeks of cover-up and conspiracy. I don't want to say conspiracy, but something's going on that they're not telling us about.
Exactly. And I think a lot of people in this country, a lot of people around the world feel the same way, because I've never seen law enforcement officials or investigators work so hard to prevent the public from seeing evidence and knowing the details about an investigation. I mean, when you look back at 9/11, for example, the worst terrorist attack to take place on U.S. soil, we knew who was behind the attack, what happened, how many people participated in the attack, why they did the attack. We knew all this information within 24, 48 hours after the towers burning down. So the fact that the FBI is telling us that they don't know the motive, I just find it to be absurd and misleading and untruthful, because in this day and age, 2018, it's nearly impossible to not have a digital footprint. And it's, nearly impossible for the government or officials within the government to not know about you and your personal life, given the surveillance state that we currently live in. I mean, it's no secret that the government often spies on private citizens. It's no secret that the government has access to information that, we would, or normal everyday citizens would expect to be private. So I'm just not buying this idea that they don't know anything about Stephen Paddock.
No, I agree. And on the autopsy, so I've been following you on this Vegas with the different people you've been reporting out there, and I think, so what was it that the exit wound when he supposedly shot himself in the mouth and the bullet did not exit?
Right, so if you look at the autopsy, there's a lot of abnormalities, and one of the most striking abnormalities was the fact that they said that he put a gun inside his mouth and basically committed suicide that way. And I spoke with an expert pathologist about the autopsy report, and he told me, and you can see this interview, it was with Jason Goodman yesterday, he told me it's very unlikely for there to not be an exit wound, because if you're putting a gun inside your mouth and you're blowing your brains out, there's, you know, the pressure is so great and it's a confined space, there's going to most likely be an exit wound. So I found that to be extremely, on top of the fact that his date of birth was not listed and the time of death for Stephen Paddock was one day after the shooting. And, you know, mind you, some people said, okay, well, that's the time that the medical examiner arrives. But, you know, you go through this autopsy report and you compare it with facts and information that was released about Paddock in the days after the shooting, there's a lot of contradictions and things that don't really make sense.
No, this is a hard one to figure out. Everything from the ISIS reports that came out initially, where ISIS claimed this. They even had on their ISIS blogs or whatever, they had the building in flames. Then you had the other theory was the gun running. I don't know if you want to take a guess, or if you had to guess, what do you think was behind this?
Well,
do you
want
to go there?
That,
I mean, I'm just wondering.
I believe that ISIS was behind this, and I've said this publicly before, because if you look at ISIS, a terrorist organization, they have never taken responsibility for an attack that they weren't responsible for.
Mm.
And some people will tell
when
you,
when I first
oh,
heard
ISIS
you say that, I dug into that, and I agree.
Yeah, and a lot of people didn't believe it when I said that, but you can look into it yourself. The two instances where investigators thought that ISIS was lying about an attack, it turns out that they were wrong, and ISIS actually did carry out the attack. And those were the jetliner going down in Egypt, right, when ISIS used a soda can bomb to blow up the plane. And then investigators said, no, ISIS is lying. But then it turns out ISIS wasn't lying. And then another incident in a casino in the Philippines, I believe, that was shot up, and they said that it wasn't ISIS. It turned out to be ISIS. So the fact that ISIS took responsibility four times and then included this in their propaganda video before and after the shooting, I just think that there's too many instances of ISIS doubling down. And what I don't understand is ISIS took responsibility immediately, and then investigators, before they even conducted or finished their investigation, they said, no, ISIS is lying. They didn't carry out this attack. Well, how do you know, right? How do you know they haven't carried out an investigation? And, you know, it leads me to believe that this was some type of gun-running operation, perhaps, where you have ISIS terrorists involved in gun-running with FBI agents or ATF agents, kind of like what we saw in the Fast and Furious scandal, but with the Mexican drug cartels, and the government lied, right? You have an instance of innocent American citizens killed, and when you look at the border agent who died, and the government tried to cover it up. So this isn't an, you know, outlandish thing to think or an outlandish theory to have, because the government has done this before. The government has lied to us. The government hasn't acted on reports of terrorists in the past. There's a lot of instances of them knowing about the activities of Islamic terrorists in our country and then not acting until it's too late. So a lot of people don't know this, because a lot of people choose to be uninformed and they don't pay attention. But when you really look at history and you look at, you know, some of these cover-ups that the government has participated in the past, it's really not too far-fetched, because the government has a history of keeping us in the dark and lying to us.
And this was about 9 months into President Trump's presidency when this happened.
Right.
What do you know?
Yeah.
So there's been reports that I've seen of different shooters at different casinos. Have you found anything out about that to confirm that other casinos were shot up?
Well, you have witnesses on the ground who said that they heard shooting, but really the evidence that we need is the surveillance footage, because people can say whatever they want, right? A lot of people see things and hear things when they're in a very, you know, high-pressured situation, or when they're under attack, and sometimes they think they heard or see things that they didn't necessarily see. So it's hard to really tell without footage. And these hotels, these casinos, are some of the most surveilled places in the world. I mean, if you go to Vegas, if you go in the casino, if you go to Mandalay Bay, you can't walk 5 feet without seeing a camera, right? Every 5 feet, there's another camera. So if they really want to convince the public that there wasn't another shooter, then why not release the footage, right? That's the question that everybody has. Why not release the footage?
No, they I'm sure they have footage of you sneaking on the elevator and going up to the 32nd floor.
Oh, they definitely
do. That was
do.
Pretty
there
good.
There was a camera in the elevator, and no one did anything. I mean, I was literally staring at the camera while I was filming that video, and no one did anything. So they have footage. They have cameras everywhere. Everywhere.
All right. In the interest of time, because this show is only 30 minutes long, let's move along here. Let me move over to this new, I'm going to call it a terrorist attack powder, the mysterious white powder.
Right.
What the hell is up with that? What do you know about that, Laura?
Well, it's very strange, because there's a series of incidents that have taken place over the past week or two. And there seems to be very high-profile political figures and individuals in politics and in the media industry that are, or, you know, media landscape, political media at least, who are receiving white powder in the mail with threatening letters. And it makes me wonder if this is, you know, an isolated individual or numerous individuals. But, you know, given the proximity of the incidents and the fact that they're so similar in nature, it makes me think that somebody is just trying to become notorious, right, for sending threatening letters with white powder. And of course, if you get white powder, you're going to freak out, because 15 years ago, I believe it was, there was a big anthrax scare, right, where somebody was believed to be sending anthrax in the mail. And there's you know, fentanyl, there's all types of white powders that are toxic if you touch them, that can kill you. So you have Vanessa Trump, right, the daughter-in-law of Donald Trump Jr., who received a letter in the mail, unmarked, and it said that Donald Trump Jr. was a horrible person and he deserved what was coming to him, and it had white powder. So she had to be taken to the hospital to be decontaminated and tested. Then about a week ago, Julian Assange received a threatening letter with white powder in the mail as well. And then today, supposedly, there was also white powder found in the office of or the same building complex as Barack Obama's D.C. office. And then on top of that, today, a suspicious package was delivered to pro-Trump, pro-Brexit members of parliament in the U.K., and yesterday, those officials, or one of them at least, received a threatening letter, a death threat. So that's what, four instances of individuals, you know, mostly conservative, right, three out of four, receiving death threats and white powder in the mail. So I really am starting to think that maybe the same person.
It's the same person?
I don't know. I mean, I'm thinking, I think that just given the fact that these have all taken place within the past week or two, I find it to be kind of strange if this were to be multiple people. It makes you wonder if it's the same person sending these letters to the same people.
Or the same person coordinating it, where I think if we think back to the anthrax attacks, they did trace that back to one guy at one lab. Where that anthrax came from. But again, you know, do you even believe that that's what the truth is? It's not good. It's not good. Let's move along to the next topic. Now we're going to get into the first district politics, which I'm going to get you into this first district politics head first. Did you see the link I sent you about Kevin Nicholson, who's vying to run against Tammy Baldwin, his parents maxing out donations for Tammy Baldwin? So he's a Republican running in the Republican primary. This information, just so you know, about his parents donating, it came out in Wisconsin, I'm going to say almost 2 months ago. So for us, it's old news. But I think what's happening is Tammy Baldwin is returning this to get this information back out there. It's pretty embarrassing. What do you have to say about that?
Well, look, it is very embarrassing, but you don't have to agree with your parents. And look, there's a lot of people in this world whose parents have opposing political views, right? So I don't know if he should really be, you know, shamed for that. Yeah, it's definitely embarrassing, and it doesn't look good when your parents are donating to your competitor, your opposition. But I don't necessarily think that it means that he's a bad guy like his opposition. Oh, this guy's so horrible. Not even his parents support him. You know, the reality is there's a lot of people in this country whose parents and family members disagree with them. I mean, I think that there's a lot of Trump supporters and a lot of conservatives who can speak to the fact that, you know, some of their family has disowned them. They don't get along with their family anymore. They lost contact with their family due to their conservative leanings. So it's not really, you know, abnormal for that to happen. I see it on a daily basis. But, you know, of course it is embarrassing.
No, I agree. And I think it has a possibility of almost boomeranging against them, because it's just people are going to use the same thought process that you did, and they're going to – I think it's going to actually end up helping Nicholson in the long run, because everything that Democrats try to do, we can just go with that, that it boomerangs back and it hits them. Ever since Trump came aboard, everything they try seems to take them down instead of the person they're trying to hit.
Exactly.
Another thing that's in the news here is the whole Paul Nealon shall not censor. And this is in back to first district politics again. Everybody knows Paul Nealon, who ran against Paul Ryan last time. He's going at it again. People have been watching Paul Nealon, and most recently Twitter banned him. Now people are saying that they suspended him, but I think he's banned. But what's happening with that, again, it's a boomerang effect. So now everybody's changing their picture to Paul Nealon, saying, I am Paul Nealon. Shall not censor is getting a lot more legs. He's probably going to be fundraising off of this. What's your take?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that this definitely helps his cause in terms of, you know, proving his point that conservatives are being censored. But I also just think that, you know, he should have expressed more judgment or better judgment when tweeting, because some of the stuff that he tweets is just completely off the rails. And look, while I completely support his right to free speech, and I support really anybody's right to free speech to say what they want, no matter how offensive it may be, you have to ask yourself, why is a congressional candidate tweeting these things, some of which can be, you know, interpreted as being very racist or anti-Semitic, and, you know, how does he really expect to gain sympathy from people? It's not like he was banned from just expressing a viewpoint, right, like a conservative viewpoint. We're talking about memes, like very provocative memes, very, you know, edgy, borderline, sometimes actually racist things that he knows for a fact are going to get him suspended from Twitter. So it's almost like he was, you know, kind of encouraging it. And look, regardless, like I said, I don't support his suspension or ban from Twitter. I think that you should be able to say whatever you want, no matter how offensive it may be. But, you know, it's not like he wasn't aware of Twitter's terms of service when he, you know, said what he said.
Agreed. And just as a side note, Nealon basically has done himself in going against Paul Ryan, for the audience, and just so you know, Laura, we usually have about 1 million people that listen, so you can say hi to all these 1 million people. And of course, that's not true, but we hope to aspire to that. The new guy out there, Nick Pulse, Nick Pulse for Congress, it's P-O-L-C-E. Have you looked at him at all, Laura?
Briefly. I mean, I'm still trying to, you know, familiarize myself with the district. Of course, I don't live in Wisconsin, but, you know, I have briefly looked.
Well, you know, his background, almost 12 years as a Green Beret. The last 4 years, he's had I call it a high-end risk mitigation company, teaches shooter. If you're a school that has to have some shooter training, or if you need cybersecurity for your big corporation, stuff like that, that special ops guys like him would do once they get out of the, you know, the Green Berets, for example. Pretty impressive guy. We'll keep our eye on him, see what he's up to.
Mm-hmm.
So what about Paul Ryan? Do you have any take on Paul Ryan since the election? Because as we know, Paul Ryan was one of the biggest never Trumpers here in Wisconsin. Paul Ryan disinvited Trump from Fall Fest when everybody knows when the pussy tape came out. What do you think about this? What people are perceiving as Ryan and Trump, you know, as getting along as best friends now.
Well, look, I don't really approve of the way Paul Ryan handled himself during the campaign. I don't think that he was supportive to Trump or the, you know, conservative cause. I find him to be extremely establishment, and, you know, he's very hostile. So even though he's had to accept the fact that Trump is president, I mean, he is very passive aggressive. At least I find Paul Ryan to be extremely passive aggressive in the way he communicates about the president in the media, the way he, talk about the president and his policies. And whenever he gets a chance to criticize Trump, whether it be for one of Trump's tweets or something he says to the media, most recently Trump's comments about, certain third world countries, you have to ask yourself, why isn't Paul Ryan just kind of keeping his mouth shut and standing with the president? You know, like what purpose does he have by, you know, taking sides with people like Nancy Pelosi and, you know, shilling for the establishment cause?
Yeah, that's a good question.
I mean, there's one thing that Paul Ryan said. He recently said, last year he said, I have three certainties in life: death, taxes, and attacks from Breitbart, right? And if you look at Breitbart became a very trusted news source for a lot of conservatives during the campaign. And Breitbart, I would argue, really played a big role in, you know, pushing Trump's agenda, pushing Trump's policies. And, if you look at individuals like Steve Bannon and, other individuals from Breitbart, I would say that Breitbart played a role in putting Trump into the White House. And, for Paul Ryan, who calls himself a Republican, to make a comment like that, it's kind of a slap in the face to a lot of conservatives who, you know, are starting to say no to the mainstream media, starting to say no to, you know, establishment conservatives like Ryan. And I think it just really reveals that he's out of touch with reality. He's out of touch with the base and what the base really wants.
It's true. With the base, you're right. In the first district, Paul Ryan has a following in a sense. It's almost like a cult of personality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is. I don't know. Just off the top of my head, it's a good way to describe it. But you know,
right.
Everybody he's been in there 20 years, Laura. 26 if you count the time he was a staffer prior to becoming the congressman. 26 years in D.C., the epitome of a career politician. So it's no wonder he's lost touch with the base.
Yeah, very long. Yeah.
What do you think about term limits?
You know, I think the term limits are a good idea. I think it's kind of ridiculous when you have a lot of these establishment individuals on the right and the left who, you know, have been in Congress, for what, 20, 30 years? I mean, it's too long. If you can really
remain in Congress for 20, 30 years unopposed, right, and manage to, you know, stay there despite, like, shifting political climates and, you know, shifting districts. It's not like these districts remain the same, right? I mean, these districts in the political landscape are constantly changing. I think not only does that just reveal the very, you know, corrupt state of Washington, you know, as we know it to be, but it also says something about a lot of these politicians, these career politicians who, you know, would rather stay in office and, you know, keep basically, you know, like renewing their terms instead of putting, you know, like a fresh face or a fresh perspective or a new leader in the system. And you see that with a lot of these different representatives all across the country. They're out of touch with their base, right? They're out of touch with the American people. And now that Donald Trump is president, you're finally seeing that a lot of these people are crumbling. They're coming out. It's coming out of the closet that a lot of these individuals have abused their power, their many years, decades in Congress to cover up sexual abuse, to cover up fraud, and all types of other nefarious activities. And this is the problem, right? Term limits and this elitist mentality that these people will always have a position in Washington, regardless of what they say and do, is, you know, it's just toxic to America. It's toxic to, you know, just the political landscape in general.
Again, Laura, I can tell you for a fact that bleeds into, say, Madison. Everybody knows about Madison, Wisconsin, the protests, the whole thing. I've got a hashtag because, as you know, I like generating hashtags. And drain the Madison swamp. The same thing goes on in Madison. The career politicians, you can just imagine it. It's just a smaller version of what goes on in D.C. So we're focusing in the first district to try and, you know, primary as many of these candidates as we can. But what you're finding out is they secure their seats, even if they have to redistrict, they redistrict themselves into safer seats. It's almost impossible, the primary. And then they're so ruthless to find somebody who will have the guts to even run against them. That's the other thing, because if you do have the guts, which I've worked with some candidates who have had the guts to try to primary, or even if it was a new district that was redistricted, they come right up to you and tell you, listen, you need to wait your turn. We've got our guy over here next in line. Maybe you should run for a smaller office. Why don't you start on county board? And then what they're saying is work your way up through the swamp. And if you kiss our ass enough, we'll be nice enough to let you rise. But don't you dare do anything that the base wants you to do unless we say it's okay. It's terrible. I have to be calm and reserved and even getting into it, because don't get me going on this thing. I've had the local politicians, the Speaker of the House in Madison, Robin Voss, tell me right to my face, the candidate I was working for, you know, it's okay that Jonathan's running. 90 seconds, Laura, we got 90 seconds. It's okay that Jonathan's running for this seat because, you know, it's been redistricted, but you should never primary an incumbent. What? Wait a second. Who works for who around here? They've absolutely forgot the way this.
My point is that these people, they're incumbents. A lot of them are incumbents, and there's this mob mentality that you can't run against them. And I say, why not? Why not?
I agree. We're down to 60 seconds, Laura. So it's Valentine's Day tomorrow. See, in your time zone, not quite. You got about 30 minutes to go until Valentine's Day. I want to wish you a happy Valentine's Day. Thank you for coming on the official Laura Loomer First District Politics Valentine show. It's just been an honor.
Thank you.
It's all, I want to say it's been an honor to get to know you and talk to you. I'm very impressed
Thank
with you.
You.
Very impressed with what you do. I see a lot of Andrew Breitbart in you. I did meet Andrew when he was in Madison a couple times. Very impressive guy. We have to be Andrew Breitbart. We have to get out there and pick it up and take it to the people, which I see you doing. And I just want to tell you, it's great to see you doing that.
Thank you.
I appreciate that.
So keep it up. We're down to 10 seconds. Let's see if the Trump train is going to come through one more time here. It's a very crude sound.
Perfect.
Our time is up, Laura. We're going to call it a show. I absolutely thank you again, and we're going to end this episode. And everybody, take this link, push it out to your followers, and everyone have a great night and a happy Valentine's Day. Talk to you later, Laura.
Bye. Thank you.
You're welcome.